Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinnistan, and this is episode 23. In this episode, I've interviewed Colin Knox. Over the last few months, we've been following Colin's progress in his attempt to complete his first West Highland Way race, which he did in the race just over 2 weeks ago. And so Colin came around this week and I was able to interview him and find out just exactly how his race went. So that's a great interview, and congratulations again to Colin for completing the West Highland Way race. The interview lasts just about 45 minutes, so that's the main item, in fact the only item of this podcast. So I hope you enjoyed the interview, and I found it really enjoyable just chatting to Colin and finding out exactly how his race went. If you want to read his full race report, it's on his blog, which you can find from the westhighlandwayrace.org website. So I hope you enjoy the interview, and well done to Colin. The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground, there's no room. Well, here we are for our final interview with Colin Knox. We've been following Colin over the last number of months in his training for the West Highland Way. And first of all, congratulations, Colin, for finishing your first West Highland Way race.
Thank you,
John. And we look forward to hearing the story of how it went. Those of you who've read Colin's blog, he's written his race report, so that's on there, but it's always fun to listen to it as well. So first of all, Colin, can you just tell us a little bit of how you felt maybe in the week before the race, and what was your build up to the big day?
Week before the race was quite nerve wracking. The last few weeks had snuck up really quickly. And I think it got to the point where I thought if I prepare any more, I'll end up, you know, forgetting something or doing something silly. So it was, I think, on the Monday before it, I just thought, I've done as much as I possibly can now. There's nothing else I can worry about. You know, everything I've done is in place. I've done the training, the preparation is there. I've thought about how I'm going to do, how I'm going to approach the race on the day. I'd set all my targets. I had sorted out the food as well. I'd made the mistake of going into YouTube and looking at all the various videos of previous races. That made it even worse. The nerves really were kicking in. You know, I was getting really excited. I'd spoken to various people during the week who run as well, and some of them were doing the race, and I think it was quite good knowing that you weren't alone in feeling the nerves and getting really fidgety as well. I'd spoken to my parents as well a couple of times regarding what I was planning to do at each checkpoint, so they were all set as well. I felt at that time that I'd done everything I possibly could to prepare for it. My enthusiasm was bursting. Mm-hmm. I was just dying to get out there and run the race. It was, you know, I was getting really impatient, I think, towards probably Thursday and Friday, which had taken off work, and the initial idea had been to try and get as much rest, sleep, and relax, you know, chill out, turn the phones off, not answer the door, just try and load up with the carbs as well, just organise any last minute kit. But I was just so nervous, and I just get impatient. I was pacing up and down all the time. But no, I think the preparation went really well. It was weird preparing for a race for nearly a year. You know, it was the sole objective for a whole year, and it was the first time I'd ever done that. And this was it. You know, it was almost there. So it was exciting. I was looking forward to it.
Great, and obviously having followed both in the podcasts and on your Facebook and on the blogs, I think you certainly did prepare well. I think you set a good schedule, sensible races, and you were in good shape. So what about that Friday night? I think it's always a bit, it's a strange day Friday, isn't it? Because you're trying to rest as much as you can. It's a long night as well. You don't get there till 11 o'clock or so, and then you register. So how was that last couple of hours just before you started?
I'd hoped on the Friday to get up early in the morning, try and keep the same routine as normal, eat in the daytime, maybe get a couple of hours sleep in the afternoon, but it just didn't work that way. I was too on edge and too hyper, and I kept checking my kit bag every 2 minutes, checking everything was packed. worrying in case I got to Mogai and suddenly realised there was something missing. I arranged my parents to come out, pick me up about 10 o'clock and head over there for about maybe 10:30, 10:45. I knew by the time I registered, it'd be quite busy, so I thought I'll get there early and get registered, get the chance to talk to some people as well, you know, get my number and get the merchandise and so on, let my parents see what the sort of pre-race thing, or you know, what it was like, try and soak up the atmosphere. I mean, they were excited as well. They've been to quite a few races and supported, but this was different for them as well. You know, it's been like 2 days worth that they'd be wide awake for, so. But no, it was great catching up with people in the start area. Everybody was just pacing up and down like me as well, just dying to get started. I know that, you know, we spoke last time about arriving too early and burning the nervous energy, and I've really began to feel that as it got close to the start. But I wanted to be there early just to try and soak up the pre-race atmosphere.
Great, and obviously the weather didn't help too much, did it? Because, you know, it had been pretty wet all day, and we knew it was going to be a wet track. But I think it's the same for everybody, and you just had to get on with it. Okay, let's just split the race up a little bit then. So let's think about Mulgai to Balmaha, the first 19 miles. You set off with 171 other people, and I know the atmosphere was just great running through the high street, wasn't it? So yeah. How did it go from your perspective, having trained for so long? As you say, it's been one of the sole things you've been thinking about. How did it feel, that first few minutes and that first 20 miles or so?
The first section was miserable, to be honest. I think everybody really felt the misery running through that weather. As well, running in the dark as well, you've got no sense of distance, you know, you don't know where you are, you can't see landmarks, so it's hard to judge. My phone had packed in quite early on as well, so I couldn't track my mileage as well, and my pacing, which I'd planned to use. But the first section went really well, apart from the rain, the mud. It got quite wet on the mile and a half stretch that you run along after you're out around Dumgoyac and you approach the beech tree. You get that big long straight, and it was just one big trench. And I think everybody gave up avoiding the muck, just charged straight through it. There was no point, your feet were wet, they were going to stay wet, you know, for a good hour or so. So there was no point in, you know, complaining about it. The rain came on quite heavy as well as we were passing the beech tree. So, you know, the waterproofs were all zipped up, and it was really weird because normally in these sort of runs, especially the likes of the Fling, everybody's talking to one another, but there was nobody talking to anybody on this set. Everybody just had their head down. And just getting on with it, because it was just such a miserable first section. I think everybody just wanted to get to the end, get to, you know, the first feed station and get some dry kit on.
And get on light as well, isn't it?
Well, that's it. I mean, it was, as I say, it was because it's so dark, you don't really know how far you have to go, which was strange. But no, I ran really well. I kept up a decent pace. I had my pacing set out and my various time targets, and by the time I got to Balmaha, I think I was only 5 minutes behind it, so I was pretty pleased with that, considering the conditions, because I felt I was going a lot slower than I had planned, just purely because of the weather, having to plough through mud and you were having to, you know, run around a lot of big puddles. Got into Drummond fairly bang on time. I kept going. I was planning to have a wee walk rest there, but I just kept going. I was with a group of other people as well, which was quite good. By that time, I think the rain had gone off a wee bit, and the daylight was, I think that's where I turned my head torch off. So it was beginning to get daylight. Ran up towards Connick, and it was just, again, it was just a very, very muddy going up there. It was horrible. Most people were walking up that. I know a couple of folk had injuries, you know, going up there, sliding in various rocks. So I think there were maybe 7 or 8 people had withdrawn by the time they got to Balmaha. So the conditions were quite bad. But no, I was feeling really good. Over Connick and coming down was usually dodgy anyway. But I was zigzagging all over the place, because trying to find the right line to stay out of the mud and stop from falling was quite hard. And then got to Balmaha and it was just midges everywhere. You know. But no, it was the first section, very, very happy with it. Very happy.
I was at Balmaha with the control, and I thought when you came through, you look good. You know, looks like you're doing, had a nice sensible pace and you got going. So from there, let's think about there to up to Ortatia, because that's quite a, you know, a long section as well, and most of it you're on your own without your support team. I know that was something you prepared for in the sense of knowing it was going to happen and you had to get on with it. So how was that section?
Yeah, I think most people had probably broken that down into the three drop bag sections, which I'd done as well. I'd given myself the various targets. It was quite difficult running over the full section, knowing that it's maybe going to be 8-9 hours before you see your support team again. Mm. If you need dry kit, tough. You know, basically, you're in your wet gear until you see them. Mm. I don't think anybody would be willing to drive round to Inversnaid just to give you a dry pair of shoes. Mm. And then drive back around again. So, no, I always enjoyed the River Dent, the section to River Denton. It's quite a hilly section, but you get a chance to recover with it, walking up the hills. But enjoyed that again. I think I lost 50 minutes between Balmaha up until Strathfillan, which wasn't that bad, you know, considering I was getting a bit sleepy, and it was, you know, 30 odd miles over that section. I wasn't too bothered. I was running well, felt comfortable. Felt the pacing was going not bad as well. Managed to keep eating as well during the run and the drop bags as well. I managed to eat most of the stuff in my drop bags, which was quite good. I think that's probably purely from taking wee nibbles as I ran along. One of the tips I picked up from a couple of people was that if you don't eat during the run, the blood stops circulating around your stomach muscles. And that's what makes you feel a little bit queasy. So I think that was quite a good thing I picked up in the sort of pre-race thing. Met a couple of people along the route I knew, ran with them, chatted to them. It was quite good because it passes the time. Before you know it, you've done 6-7 miles. Next checkpoint, same thing, you meet people. So it was good. I met a couple of people for the first time as well, which is good. So it's good to have more people I know as well. But no, really happy. The rain had gone off. For a wee while anyway. Still very wet underfoot. I had a complete change of clothes at Balmaha, but it's just a waste of time, really. You know, within 5 minutes, you're soaking wet again anyway, so yeah. you just got on with it. Yeah. But no, I was really... I'd thought about using an MP3 player during the race, excuse me. Ended up not using it at all. I just had so many things going through my head. And then again, chatting to people as well passes the time, which is quite good. But no, I was really positive when I got to Ortatia. As I say, I knew that was a target time I wanted to try and get as close to, because it's more or less the entire length of the fling. So I knew the route really, really well. And I got to Ortatia, I think I spent about half an hour here, because I was really wet and quite cold. So I wanted a full change of kit this time, and I put on full length trousers this time rather than the shorts, dry shoes, dry everything, I think. And quite a good substantial stop for food as well, because I knew the next section was going to get quite hilly, and then over onto Bridge York as well. But no, I was still on track and still enjoying myself, which is the main thing as well.
Yeah. I think one of the key things for anyone who finished, you know, they had to have that real determination. And I think if you can stay as positive as you can, even on a day like that, it's going to make such a difference. And, you know, just hearing you there relating how you felt, you were still enjoying it, even though it was wet and a bit miserable. You were still, you know, this is what you trained for. This is what you wanted to do. So that was good. So I think that's a good idea to have a complete change there. Because at least then, you know, you've got a chance. And it did ease off a bit, didn't it, from then onwards? It wasn't, so wet, was it?
Just wet underfoot most of the rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just wet underfoot for most of the day. The rain eased off probably for the second half. We did have some low cloud later on, but it was a constant conditions underfoot that really, I think, made it miserable in some sections. Because I think I had maybe 3 or 4 changes of socks throughout the day, three changes of shoes as well, and just the difference putting on a dry pair of shoes, even for 10 minutes, it's the confidence it suddenly gives you an extra burst of speed and you skip along, and then 5 minutes later your feet are ringing again. But no, it was it's great. Dry clothes, it's absolute heaven.
So you set off from Uchtitir with a spring in your step, and knowing that you're over halfway, and it was you knew you could do it. So what about that next section? Let's take from there to Glencoe. How did that go?
Next section, I left Uchtitir and I was feeling really good. I'd fed in my belly. I was feeling really comfortable. Tri-kit on, ran into Tyndrum. It was only after, I think I mentioned it in my blog, it was only afterwards that I discovered that people were being told to divert over the river. I didn't realise people were being told that. I spotted somebody in front of me and I thought I'd chase them down, just passing by the way, at the station. He crossed the river, but I didn't see how he got across it. And when I got to it, I thought, how am I going to get over it? Because it was really deep. It must have been up past my shins anyway. And I think I made 3 attempts at crossing it. Various steps, and I just thought, you know what, just straight through. And that was it. Feet were soaking wet again, but thought, never mind, they're going to be wet anyway. Got up to the cottages at Clifton, crossed to 82, and I just dived into Brodie's, got an ice cream, walked up the hill eating that, past the graveyard, feet ringing, didn't really care anymore. Spotted a few people in front of me, tried to catch up with them, but I think they kept looking back and saw me coming, so they kind of put an extra spring in their step, and they got away. When I got down to Ochfarm, I think I've said a few times, is the 56 mile mark, which is the furthest I've ever run, is 56 miles in the past, so that was kind of a milestone. Once I passed that, I knew that this is the furthest you've ever gone before, which was an achievement in itself. So I thought anything from now beyond that, regardless of whether I finished, you know, it would be a huge, huge bonus. You know, I kind of tick in the life box of passing that. But I mean, I was still going really well. It's a great wee section to Bridge of Orkney. It's relatively flat. So again, I met a few people, walked with Ada and Bill, met Fiona. And I think that was the first time that Silka caught me, just getting to Bridge of Orkney. Met my folks again at the checkpoint. Had something to eat there. I think I only spent about 10-15 minutes there. And then the next section from there to Ski Slopes, it's my favourite of the whole route. I know a lot of people hate it. I'd probably hate it as well if it was snowing and blizzard and really bad weather, but it's a section which I'd planned to cover in 3 hours. And I think when I got to Bridge of Orkney, I thought, the speed I was going at, I thought, I'm losing a wee bit of time here. I don't think I'll do it in 3 hours, but I managed it in 3 hours, 1 minute. So it was more or less bang on what I'd planned. Because I've run up and down that is quite a few training runs now, and it's a really good section. Plus being a hill walker as well, I love the hills up there. So
you saw Murdo, did you?
Yeah, got to the top. I didn't, at first I thought, why is he up here? Usually he's at the top of Connick. I thought, it's strange, but as soon as I saw the figure, I knew it was him. Yeah. He'd built his own wee cairn as well, marking the 100k mark, handing out jelly babies, and he actually stopped me to chat to me, and I felt like saying, Murdo, I'm trying to get away from these people, and he chatted away, and I felt like saying, Murdo, seeing as you've kept me here, the people coming up behind me, grab them and have a conversation as well. I saw a few folk coming up from behind that I knew, so I was like hinting, you know, Murdo, keep them back. But it was good to see Murdo up here. I think it lifted most people's spirits. He'd been up there for about 10 hours standing in that weather. So I mean, if he can stand out there in that weather, there's no reason why we can't run in it. The downhill section as well, I passed 6 people on a downhill. I just seemed, from the top of that hill all the way into the ski slope, I just seemed to get a second wind. And I flew past people down the hill. I passed Fiona Rennie at Victoria Bridge, which I was surprised at. I think eventually I looked back at one point, going over Rannoch Moor, the Black Mountain, and I couldn't see Emdy, which, you know, part of me was telling me, slow down, if you can't see these people who you know are better runners than you, you're going too quick. But another part of me was saying, you're feeling good now, keep going, just now, make the most of, you know, this burst of energy. And I think Fiona had shouted at me to turn round just before I passed her, because like a bit of blue sky had suddenly appeared, and she had her camera out taking a picture of it. But no, I really enjoy that section. Text my parents at the cairn at the top, the Black Mount, just to let them know I was coming down, just to get everything organised. I wanted quite a quick checkpoint in that one, because I knew the next section was going to be really hard. and I wasn't wanting to hang about at the ski slope because I knew the longer I hung about, the less likely I'd want to keep going. Yeah. Quite busy at Glencoe as well, quite a lot of people coming and going. A lot of people in their cars getting sorted as well. Met a few more folk I knew as well. Mm. But I didn't want to hang about there, so it was just a case of in, rice pudding, cup of tea, you know, a quick sandwich, straight back out again. Mm. I don't think I changed there. I just kept my wet gear on and decided I'll keep going until I get to Kinlochleven, yeah, and put on my last pair of dry shoes there. But no, I was going well. I think by that time I was about an hour and 52 hours behind overall. But that's just purely down to me messing around at checkpoints, taking too long. Mm-hmm. But no, everything was looking good up to that point so far.
Yeah. And then the next section, as you say, can be a bit of a tough one. Yeah. But it sounds though you were still moving really well, and you know, things were on target. Mm-hmm. I think when you have a target time, when the weather's like that, you do have to adjust. Yeah. You know, and I would imagine the time goes out the window in a sense. It's just a case of finishing as well as you can from that point onwards. So how was the run to Kinlochleven?
Kinlochleven was a section I've never run in the dark before. I've run it in the Dipple before, and I've run it a couple of training runs up and down the staircase and down the other side, but from the ski slope to the bottom at Alton Affay, dead easy. Went really well. I just breezed along past a couple of people who were walking. I got to the bottom of the staircase. I thought, I'm going to try and power walk up this. Mm. It was fairly hard going, as most folk know, up that. I stopped a few times just to look at the view as well as catch my breath. I ended up catching up with a guy who I kind of stuck with on and off all the way into Kinlochleven, which is quite good because it was getting quite dark now. I think when we topped out, this is we dropped over the cairn, that's when we put the head torches on. And I think that's probably the first time I've begun to, I don't know whether it's hallucinating or not, I don't know. But it was, everything just seemed to catch the head torch, you know, everything was moving, and I think it was just down to tiredness, because I wasn't feeling physically tired. I was just getting so sleepy. At that time, and rocks were moving, and I think at one point I ended up looking up to a rock and touching it, and I thought, is this moving? And it was weird, but after a couple of slaps, you know, I kind of woke myself up and kept going, because I wanted to keep up with this guy in front. I thought, you know, maybe if I keep up with somebody, it's safety in numbers as well, because it's quite rocky going down that. And then I think I had a wee moment of panic as well, because it was dark, you couldn't see anything, and I hadn't run it in the dark before, and you lose where you are. And I kept thinking I'd taken the wrong turning. I thought I was maybe going the way up to the Blackwater Dam. I thought, I couldn't see anything, couldn't see anybody, because I lost this guy. I ended up passing him and running away ahead, and he was out, and I turned around, he was gone. And I was on my own for a while, and the path just seemed to keep turning back in itself. I thought, where am I going? I couldn't hear anybody, I couldn't see anything. I kept stopping to look for waymarkers, and I couldn't find any waymarkers anywhere. I thought, I'm going downhill, so it's going to have to, you know, come out somewhere. Yeah. And I kept going, and eventually I got a waymarker point. I thought, yeah, that's fine, I know where I am now. So I began running again. And then maybe about 15 minutes later, the same thing. The path seemed to go back in itself and go uphill. I thought, I shouldn't be going uphill. again, I couldn't see MD, so it was panic. Where am I? And of course, with my phone not working, I couldn't get my GPS position either. Yeah. So I'll keep going. If I've got to turn back, I'll turn back. You know, if the worst comes to the worst, it'll be daylight in a few hours, so it's no big deal. And then a guy came down behind, it was a guy that passed, so we kind of stuck together, and he'd something, it was his father was with him. It was somebody with poles, he was obviously walking with him. I think this guy had hurt his ankle because he was going quite slow. And then a guy came down, a foreign-sounding runner, and he, you know, kind of thought he knew where he was going, which we didn't have a clue. The three of us had no idea. And this guy, I know where I'm going, I think. So we followed him, and then we heard the pipes. We heard the water coming through the pipes, and we knew who we were. So the sense of relief, though, because I was really panicking, because I thought I should be in Kinlochleven well before now. Yeah. And I was beginning to get really worried, because I thought, I've got to go back up this hill and find another path. Yeah. I don't know where I'm going. I couldn't even see Kinlochleven. I couldn't see any lights, but we got on the right path, and he seemed to know where he was going, so we followed him. And then eventually, I think there was one of the marshals was standing just at the river crossing. So he waved, just pointed us in the right direction through the houses and then onto the street. And then I managed to see my dad leaning over the bridge watching for me. So once I saw him, I knew I was in the right place. Got into Kinloch leaving, still feeling reasonably good. It was just tiredness was beginning to creep in. I was sleepy. My legs were feeling pretty good. My feet were beginning to get a wee bit sore. I think that was just purely from being wet all day. But no, it was relief as well, getting into Kinloch leaving, because I think I always said at the start, as long as I get to Kinloch leaving and I'm within the cut-off time, I know I'm definitely going to finish. Yeah. Even if I've got to walk all the way in, I know I will finish. So it was getting there was just brilliant. Yeah. I didn't want to hang about either. Went into the community centre, saw Julie get weighed, straight back out again. Quite a few people though were lying in the main hall, which was quite an eye-opener.
Yeah.
That I didn't realise just how many people were suffering. And I thought I was getting quite run down, but there were some people out there who were really, really were struggling. Wrapped up in blankets, and the lights were turned off, and I think Chris Ellis was there. The doctor, he was checking a few people as well. So, but I didn't hang about. Straight in, straight back out, over to the car, got fed, last pair of dry trainers on, which is my road shoes, which I'd purposely left them because they've got a bit more cushioning, so I knew that they'd be quite good in the last bit because my feet were beginning to ache a wee bit, and I was still feeling really good. Tried to follow a group out, which included Silka and Katrina as well, and three others who I didn't know. So I thought I'll make it my target to try and keep up with them for as long as I possibly could, and see what happens after that.
Yeah, I must admit, I was at the checkpoint at Kinloch Leaving. I've been there for, I think we got there about 9:30, time for our chippy meal. Yeah. And then I was looking out for you, and then obviously I was doing the splits, and then after a while I saw your number and that you'd come and gone, so I actually missed you. But from what you said, you were actually outside. But yeah, I find it quite interesting being at Kinloch Leaving, because there was some folks that were in a bad way and yet showed a lot of resolve. People like Caroline, who we interviewed last week, who I think she was probably one of the ones lying down during that time. You know, and to be, I always think you're so close, aren't you? Thinking in the sense of the journey of 95 miles, you're almost there. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, you've still got 14 miles to go. Yeah, and I remember last year when I was struggling, you know, 14 miles, that's a full day's walk, isn't it? If you went out in the hills and did 14 miles, that would be a full day.
You'd be really happy with that.
Yeah, and you still got that to do. So it's still, you know, even though, as you say, if you get there and you're still moving and you're inside the cutoffs, there's a good chance you can finish. But that's where the mental toughness comes in, because you've got to want to do it, and it could take up to 6-7 hours. You know, it's a long way to walk. So, and it was dark as well, which makes a big difference. Yeah. So you got that far, and from what you were saying, you were still pretty positive, maybe a bit sleepy, but still moving okay. Got your new shoes on, your road shoes. So how did the last section go?
Yeah, the last section started off really well. I was feeling really comfortable. So say, new shoes, new socks, comfortable, fed. Off I went. Made the sort of target to try and keep up with the six in front of me. Got over the road, up onto the climb, and within about 2 minutes my feet were wet again. It just seemed a total waste of time. I don't know why I kept changing. It was just, I don't really know why I bothered changing at all at any point during the race. I know some runners didn't even change at all. There was no point. I'd even thought about buying waterproof socks before the race, and I know a couple of people had bought a couple of these skin seal socks, but I don't know if they helped any. Climbed up, I lost contact with the six runners for a while. They were walking a lot quicker than me, and I could see the head torches, you know, in the distance bobbing up and down. I could actually hear their voices. I could hear Silka talking. I think it was Katrina as well, and somebody else talking. So I thought, if I can keep that sound, if I can try and keep it within earshot and keep going, I've got a chance of catching up. Going up the path, it was strange. I don't remember the path being the same as it was in the Divil, which was really weird. I thought that the path was zigzagged an awful lot more than it did. And again, it was getting back to the coming down off the top of the double. I thought, where am I? You know, have I taken the right path? Because yeah, I was convinced that so I was just convinced the path did a lot more twisting and turning.
Yeah.
But eventually, I began to catch up with the guys in front of me. I think it was the group of three. I caught up with them first, and one of the guys had turned, and I didn't know who they were, but I recognised the faces, and they'd asked, look, stick with us if you want. So I ran with them for a wee bit, and then we caught up with Silk and Katrina just at the Wilderness Rescue Guys post, which was fantastic, because they had big, I think it was big candles they had out, and they approached it, so it was like a landing strip as you approach them. So we got a wee photograph taken there, and then I ran with them. I think all six of us stuck together for a few minutes. The three others ran on ahead, and then Katrina, she ran with me for maybe 5-10 minutes chatting away. But I knew she was dying to get away up with Silka, because I was really beginning to get quite slow. My feet were getting sore, and I think at that point I realised that probably the road shoes weren't the best thing to wear on that surface. I thought the cushion would have helped, but it didn't really. So Katrina, I slowed down, Katrina ran on, and then it was about 5 minutes after that I went down in my face. It was, I think, just out of tiredness, and I wasn't watching my feet. I kept looking up with the torch and looking around me, trying to find landmarks, and as soon as you take your eye off that road in that dark, down you go, because it's just so rocky. Pulled my groin muscle, and it was so sore, and I was that annoyed, because I've been going really well up until now.
Yeah.
I'd slipped a few times previously, but nothing, I hadn't gotten down. This is the first time I'd actually fallen on the deck.
Yeah.
It was so sore. And that kind of really put paid to me running the rest of the way. But I look back and think, you know, I could have got under 29 hours if I hadn't fallen, and part of me is angry, disappointed, but, you know, I mean, just finishing the race, it was brilliant. But it was pitch black, on my own, couldn't see anybody, couldn't hear anybody. Kept looking back as well, hoping to see head torches, but there was nothing. And I think it crosses everybody's mind at that point, and has everybody else dropped out? Am I the tail ender? You know, it's weird. And the Larrigmore, you can see, not in daylight, you can see for miles.
Yeah.
But at night time, 4 feet, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
But you'd think that head torches, you can see them for miles, but I couldn't.
Yeah.
Occasionally I got a glimpse of the guys in front of me maybe turning round or looking to the side. I would get a quick flicker, but
yeah,
within maybe 5 minutes they were miles away, what looked like miles away.
Yeah.
And then it was the kind of doubt begins to creep in. You know, you're on your own, you've got 10, 12 miles to go. How are you going to get there walking, you know, limping like this? Got to the second checkpoint just after the ruin. I passed the ruin as well, and it was one of these moments you get when you saw the shadows, which kind of freaked me out, because it was another one of these hallucinating, you know, moments. You think there's things coming up to get you in the dark, and I was pretty getting quite tired as well, because I think I'd been up maybe about 48 hours at this point on the go. But no, I head down, kept going, got to the second rescue point. The guide asked me if it was okay. I think I was just that tired, I just wasn't wanting to talk. I just, I'm fine, how far till Invadra? It's 2.5 miles, and kept going. Got there, and I think it was that late in the race, the fire had almost burned out. I was expecting to see a huge big bonfire, but it was hardly anything there.
Yeah.
Even the guys that were hanging about, they looked shattered as well. I don't know how long they'd been hanging about there, they looked really tired.
Yeah.
Didn't even bother stopping, I kept going. Got through the forest that's been cut down. I think by then maybe three people had passed me, which was good in a way, because I knew that I wasn't the only one that's probably walking.
Yeah.
Which was quite good. I was expecting a flurry of people coming bombing past every 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Which was quite good. I think the last person that passed me was Don McDonald, I think it was.
Right.
Or Sue Walker, it was one of them. They passed me, and that was the last person that passed me, just on that climb up yeah, up to the forest, up to the top of the hill. Which was quite sore. I was finding it quite hard walking over rocks as well at that point, because I couldn't lift my leg up. Got to the top of the hill, and then it's all downhill, and that was just murder. It was just the constant, you know, footfalls on my sore leg was just really difficult. But again, you know, it was just, I think I got halfway down the smile just across my face. I was, because I knew I was getting to the end, I knew I was going to finish it. I was determined to get there. Got down to the Braveheart. I think that's the hardest bit, is the Braveheart, because you know you've got that road section to go, and it's a mile, and it just seemed to go on forever.
Mm.
It's one of these, when you see in the movies, the camera pulls away and it seems to get further. It just felt as if I was running a treadmill.
Yeah.
But then I got around the corner where the cottages start, just for the roundabout, and saw my mum coming, and then I saw Paul Giblin's mum coming, the two of them walking towards me. I thought, that can't be right. And they actually outpaced me walking. I was falling behind. They were fresh as daisies, but I mean, I was really suffering at that point, my leg. But I was determined, I wanted to cross the line, you know, at least jogging anyway. Came round the corner. I'm shouting to my mum, turn round and point the camera. I didn't want her to miss the photo opportunity, because my camera was out of action. Hit the centre doors. I don't even remember what happened after that, to be honest with you, John. I was so tired, so sore, just wanted to sit down, get something to eat. It was just, everything just seemed to blur. I remember talking to you though, and I remember talking to Ian and a couple of other folk, and then it was just collapsing at the changing room. But so the sense of relief though, it was brilliant. It didn't hit me until I think the awards that I'd finished. I think my brain was just so all over the place, and not realising that I'd managed to finish it.
Yeah.
I think it was 30 hours 50, which is a bit over the 20 hours which I'd hoped to get, but a finish is a finish.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the end of the day, that's what counts.
Yeah.
No, as I say, I think it was a tremendous performance. Any finish in that race is a good one,
yeah.
But in those conditions, it just means so much more.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in a sense, I think that's still a very reasonable time, you know, given the conditions, and certainly you could take time off that, but from what you said as well, you know, it's, I always think when you stub your toe, it's just annoying, because you've got loads of pains anyway, and you accept that your legs are shattered and they're sore and your feet are sore, but when you do something extra like you fall in and hurting your groin, that's almost an unfair pain, isn't it? And it's really tough. So again, to finish, you know, it was a really, really good effort. So congratulations.
You.
So you finished, you had a little bit of a rest, and then off to the prize giving.
Yeah.
How did you find the prize giving and just being there, you know, in that atmosphere with, that must have been at least 500 or 600 people, wasn't there, in that hall?
Absolutely.
So how did it feel to go and collect your goblet?
Yeah.
Well, it was, you know, a year's worth of hard work. It was fantastic. I don't know how I would have felt if I hadn't finished it, and I'll never know that.
Yeah.
But the sense of achievement, you know, I mean, I got into the hall early, I think maybe only half a dozen folk were there, and sat down with it was Paul Giblin's family, and it was sitting in, I was getting that, you know, come on, I want my goblet, where is it? Well, the crowd that was in, and there was amazing, excuse me, I mean, as you say, there were 500, 600 people crammed into that wee hall.
Mm.
It was something amazing. And what struck me as well was every single person got a huge big cheer.
Right.
I mean, it was brilliant. Just it's a great way to have a presentation. Everybody in there at the end together.
Yeah.
Everybody to see each other getting it. Plus, I had no idea who'd finished and who hadn't finished up until that point.
Right.
I knew some people had dropped out because they'd stayed on and were cheering folk on. But seeing people you didn't realise had finished was brilliant.
Mm.
And I've kept in touch with a lot of folk, you know, throughout the year, and meeting them at races, and we've talked about how we're going to do the race, and yeah, we'll see you there at the finish. Definitely, you'll definitely all finish. And it was brilliant to see everybody getting up and getting the reward.
Yeah.
But no, it was quite quite emotional as well, I think, as well. I think everybody, you know, haven't achieved their target. I know a lot of people have worked really, really hard you know, to get it. You know, there's been a lot of sacrifices as well made by a lot of people, you know, through their training and running the race. I mean, some people ran themselves to the ragged end on that. And it was like Sir Ada. When I turned, I couldn't believe it, what she'd done. And wheelchair, it was, excuse me, I think it was Leslie as well in hospital.
Yeah.
It just shows you that the race does not take prisoners. You know, it really does push you to the, you know, the actual edge.
Yeah.
But no, it was brilliant. Getting up and getting my goblet as well from Sean, just brilliant.
Mm.
Absolutely brilliant. Just, you know, getting my hands on it at last and done it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. And it was obviously it was a real privilege for me as well with Sean being able to give out the goblets, and I just loved it, seeing people's faces and, you know, just knowing how much it meant to people to be able to accomplish that. And I think that is unique in a sense of having that prize given, because every single person, as you say, gets a big cheer because we're all aware of what it takes to get there. And every single person in that room is either ran or supported or is involved in the race. It's not like just a general public, is it? It's those who appreciate what you've done. So that was great. Well, the race is just over a week and a bit away, so you've had a little bit of time to think about it. As you reflect on it, what big lessons have you think you've learned about yourself or life in general?
Yeah, people ask me that at the finish, you know, and I think I've taken away a bucket load of positives on this. I think the main one now is knowing that I'm capable of doing it.
Yeah.
There was always doubts, you know, there. Even though you're always enthusiastic and you're keyed up, but I think when you start the race, you think, you know, I've got 95 miles to go. How am I going to drag myself, especially in that weather?
Yeah.
I mean, there were points in the race. I think most folk must have thought, you know, stuff this, and I could be in my bed. But no, I think I now know that I'm capable of doing a race like that. I can run that distance. I think the preparation as well, everything seemed to, you know, to go well. It set me in good stead for the race. Ticked a lot of the boxes, you know, the problems that I had over previous races. Everything seemed to fall in place, which was fantastic. This went so well, you know. I was just happy to get to the finish. It's one of these things that people ask, does it change your life? Which, you know, it certainly made me love running a lot more. You know, I mean, it's, you make new friends as well along the way, which we'll hopefully keep in contact with. But, you know, a great deal of satisfaction.
Yeah.
Having that goblet sitting at home now. As soon as I walk through the front door, it's at the end of the hallway, so it's the first thing I see now when I come in. So it was weird because you keep getting up and looking at it. Is it real? But no, it's great. And plus, as you were saying there, it's, everybody gets congratulated by everybody else, and it kind of reaffirms that family that people mention all the time, and it's fantastic to be involved with that now. Absolutely fantastic. But no, I'm gonna cherish it. Hopefully it's not the only one. Hopefully there'll be another one sitting there shortly.
Excellent. Well, maybe preempting my last question, because obviously you've been targeting this for the last year. Yeah. So what's next, both in the short term? Have you got any other races this year? Mm-hmm. And have you thought about next year and whether you'd like to do it again?
Yeah. Next year, I definitely want to try and do this again. Whether it's next year, I don't know yet. I've not really thought that far ahead, but it's a race I want to do again.
Yeah.
Whether or not I do something different next year, I don't know yet. But I'm definitely doing it again at some point. I've got the Devil of the Highlands coming up again shortly. Did it last year. So I'll be running over the Larrigmore again. Hopefully this time without falling.
Yeah. Well, you've been the daylight this time.
Well, that's the thing. It's in daylight. Starts and finishes in daylight, which is good.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll be dry as well. I've also got the Glen Ogle 33 as well, which I did last year. And I'm waiting patiently on a place on the Glenmore 24 as well. So I've really only got three left that I'm planning this year. I'm not planning doing as many as I did last year. Was just crazy. I just ran myself into the ground. So this year, I think up until the West Highland Way race, I wasn't really looking ahead beyond that. But now it's out of the way. Now my enthusiasm's, you know, kind of, I'm reinvigorated. I want to try and do a few more. I wanted to do the Triple Crown, as people call it, last year, but I didn't do the West Highland Way race last year, so hopefully this year I'll have done all three. I'll probably do another few small sort of half marathon. When you say small, it sounds ridiculous now when you say to somebody, I'm only going to go out and do a half marathon or a marathon after having run 95 miles. It seems like a walk in the park, but I'll do a few more wee ones, and before we know it, it'll be November time again. Time to make that decision to enter it or not to enter it, but I'm definitely wanting to do it again at some point. I've met a few people since then when I've been out shopping and so on, talked to them, and everybody, you ask them and it's the same reaction, they kind of, their eyebrows, you know, arch and they're not sure, but you know in the back of their mind that they're going to do it again.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to be back.
Yeah, the amount of people who finish and say, never again, I'm never doing that. And then the next day, by the prize giving, they're already thinking, oh, I could take some time off there, and I could, if I did that better, you know.
The what ifs and the why for.
Well, thank you very much, Colin, and thanks for tonight, and thanks for sharing your journey with us. It's been really good over the last few months on the podcast, just to get a sense of your training. And I think the example that you set is a good one, you know, the way you've prepared yourself, the way you've approached it, both physically and mentally, and you've got your reward, you've got your goblet, and and I'm sure there's a quicker time in there for you as well. Most people do tend to improve significantly on their second one, because you set off with a completely different attitude on the second one, knowing that you can do it. And then, you know, there's not quite the fear that you've got for the first one. And hopefully it'll be better weather.
Can't get any worse.
That's right. And then, so that'll be easier. So congratulations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hope you've enjoyed episode 23 of the West Harlem Way Race podcast. Hopefully there'll be plenty more to come. The next podcast will be Ian Wallace reading his race report. I was hoping to put these on the same podcast, but it was too big in the end, so I've done it as two separate ones. So I hope you've enjoyed this one, and watch out for more to come. If anybody else would like to be interviewed or would like to send me their race report for a podcast, then please do so. I just need it as an MP3 file, so you can send it to me. That would be great. And if you want to find out more about the West Harlem Way Race, then the website is the place to go to, westharlemwayrace.org. And I hope you enjoyed this one. And lots more to come. Remember, slow and steady wins the race.